I remember having a conversation with a person who had grown up in the Wheaton area. My car had broken down on the highway. He was the tow truck guy. He explained to me that from his point of view, the most important part of being a Christian was not so much believing it, which I sense that he did, but actually putting it into practice at work.
Welcome to The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody. Ephesians, the fifth chapter, is where we're going to be looking. We'll include some portion of the sixth chapter as well. This is our series, Biblical Answers to Life's Big Questions. And today, we're dealing with the issue of family, work, and church. Josh Moody is senior pastor of College Church located in Wheaton, Illinois, and I'm your host, Todd Bastid. Josh, a number of times in this series already, we've mentioned the power of living out our faith, and it sounds like we're going right down the middle of that issue today.
Yeah, we really are. The Christian faith is not simply a Sunday thing. It's something for every day of the week.
Let's see how that plays itself out. We're going to start at Ephesians 5, verse 22, and make our way to chapter 6, verse 9, looking at family, work, and the church. Here's Josh.
What would you say was the most important part of the Christian life? What we do at church? Or what happens at home and at work? I remember having a conversation with a person who had grown up in the Wheaton area. My car had broken down on the highway, and he was the tow truck guy. He explained to me that from his point of view, the most important part of being a Christian was not so much believing it, which I sense that he did, but actually putting it into practice at work. Another person said to me that for her, what was most important was people not being, in her own words, a fundy on Sunday and a loosey the rest of the weeky. Well, you know, we can sing How Great Thou Art, the latest Getty or Townend song, on a Sunday, but then we get home. And before 5 minutes are up, we're having an argument with our wife, or getting annoyed at our children, or we go to work, and we're using quite a different set of language than that which we use when we're singing songs on Sunday. The Apostle Paul was aware of the importance of where we spend the majority of our lives, not at church, but at family and at work. And that's why he wrote this part of his letter. It's written by the Apostle Paul. He was in jail in Rome. It was probably written to be passed around, not just the church in Ephesus, but several other churches in the province of Asia, which had heard the gospel through Paul's strategic ministry at the Hall of Tyrannus in Ephesus. It is a great letter. If Romans is, according to Luther, purest gospel, Ephesians, according to Martin Lloyd-Jones, is most sublime gospel. And now it gets very practical. What does it mean to follow Jesus at home? How do we do that at work? How do we parent as a follower of Jesus? How do we live as husband and wife together as a follower of Jesus? Well, Paul addresses three areas: marriage, parenting, and work. So first, marriage. This is verses 22 to 33. And as you scan your eye down there with me, that section, you'll see that Paul teaches four keys to a healthy marriage. One, he puts Christian marriage in the context of mutual submission. So verse 22 does not immediately repeat the word submit in the original Greek, but carries over the topic from verse 21, which is about our mutual submission as followers of Jesus. Two, he then calls upon the wives to submit to their husbands. The word submit means subordinate, to put under. He is telling the wives to recognize the authority of their husbands over them. 3, but then he calls upon the husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church. He has something very particular in mind by that phrase. What he means by that is he's asking the husbands to die to their own desires for the sake of their wives in the same way that Jesus loved the church when he died on the cross. So it is mutual submission in context, but a specific non-mutual submission of the wife to the husband in marriage, but then a high sacrificial calling of the husband to die to himself, to love his wife as Christ loved the church. And then 4, he gives a reason, the motivational reason. Why? Well, because Christian marriage has a particular role of representing this love that Christ has for the church. So he says, verse 32, I'm talking about a mystery here, but really I'm speaking about Christ and the church. What he means by that, technical word, mystery for Paul, what he means by that is that since the very beginning, marriage was a message hardwired into nature to speak of the kind of sacrificial love and reception of that love which Christ has for the church and the church is to have for Christ. Rochelle and I do a lot of premarital counseling. We've done a lot over the years, and I can tell you this topic always comes up. Rochelle puts it like this. She says, if your husband really is dying to himself to give you what is best, then submitting to that is easy. And the other way around too. If your wife is really following you and trusting you, then to give yourself for her, well, that's easier as well. Basically, it's a dance. One leads, the other follows. But you're in the dance of life together. The word submit has been so misunderstood that really we almost need another word for it. And Paul actually uses another word for it at the end of this section. It's translated here, respect. I usually explain it like this. If you really want to start a fight between two men, here's how you would do it. Just go into a bar, or if you prefer, a coffee shop, which perhaps you should, and publicly pick out some guy, publicly disrespect him. You'll probably get a tussle. There is something about the male ego that thrives on respect. Similarly, in a different way, there's something about women that thrives on being adored. The man's role is to adore their wives. It's a pretty nice job if you can get it. The woman's job is to respect her man. She is to say, think and feel, that's my guy. A man needs to know that for one woman in the world, he is her hero. Now, of course, I don't have time this morning to deal with all the hard cases that can come up in marriage. But here, Paul sets out the 4 keys to a healthy marriage in general. A context of mutual submission to Christ as both being Christians. A particular distinct submission of the wife to the husband. A particular distinct personal sacrifice of the husband to the wife. And all this for a motivational reason. Your marriage has the opportunity of sending a message to everyone about how great Jesus is, about how much God loves us. I don't know about you, but I think there is no more powerful witness than seeing an old man taking care of his frail wife, nor of a young man adoring his young bride. Nor of a woman respecting her man. So as we close this section, let me ask you then this question. What could you do in your marriage today that would make it speak more of God's love in Christ?
We're moving on to healthy parenting tips from this passage in just a moment. But first, a reminder that Josh Moody, who is both married and a family man, is the senior pastor of College Church located in Wheaton, Illinois. And if your travels have you in Wheaton, 30 miles west of the city of Chicago on a Sunday, we'd love to have you join us for a worship service. Back into our study now. Here's Josh.
So first, marriage. Second, parenting. Parenting. This is verses 1 to 4 of chapter 6. And similarly, again, Paul is putting this relationship in the overall context of our mutual connection to Christ in the family of God, the church, as he talks about our individual families. But there are some particular duties. And Paul here has three keys to healthy parenting. One, the child is to obey their parents. Two, the child is to obey for a reason, motivational reason. What is that? That it may go well with the child and they may live long. So all other things being equal, assuming a good family, assuming a Christian upbringing, the number one predictor of a healthy, successful life is following the early instructions of your parents. Now, there does come a time when obedience switches to honor. An adult child no longer obeys their parents, but they are still to honor their parents always. And three, the father is to train, not exasperate his children. Now, what is often not brought out here, but what is very obvious in the text, is that the responsibility for the training of the children is put on the father. The mother's not mentioned here. Now, obviously, mothers do discipline and training too, of course. But here's the thing, if we're going to be frank with each other, the tendency of all fathers since time began is to come home from work, slump exhausted on the couch, and watch TV. Paul is saying to the fathers that while they may delegate aspects of the training of their children to their wives, the ultimate responsibility for their children's training is on them. That's their job, to ensure it gets done and gets done right. A child wants to know how to live life. And if no one is telling them how to do it, well, that will lead to feeling exasperated. Only time will tell whether we are doing a good job of applying this teaching in our family. But here are a few of the techniques that we have developed over the years that I often share in pastoral conversations. First, I have said that our family runs on grace. So, when someone messes up, they go to time out. They must be silent in time out. Then after time out, what was done wrong is calmly explained. They are asked to say sorry, and then immediately forgiveness is offered. If they have offended a sibling, a brother or sister, they are to say sorry to each other and then immediately offer each other forgiveness. When it comes to training positively, different ages require different approaches, of course. A young child just needs to learn to obey. They have to stop when you say stop so they do not get run over by a car along the road. As they get older, you have to train them to be their own person and let the reins go bit by bit so they can venture out into life on their own and have a sense of responsibility and independence. We do a daily devotional time with each of our children. When they were young, we did that with them on our lap before bed. As they get older, having been trained that way, they do that devotional time themselves. It was our way, it is our way of training them to read the Bible and pray. And there are many other ways that was ours. Overall, we try to establish a context of secure attachment or love. The last element that is worth mentioning in this very brief overview of parenting is prayer. I pray for each of my children by name each day. It's probably the biggest legacy I can ever give them. So marriage first, then parenting, Again, as we close this section, let me ask you a question. What could you do today, parents and children, so that home becomes more of an opportunity for a long and blessed life? Third, work. Now, this is verses 5 to 9. Now, as you scan your eye down there, you will realize that on the surface of it, this is about bond servants or even slavery. In fact, Paul is still in the ancient household. Each of these elements are about how people to behave at home. But as he's talking about masters and bond servants, it is often and fairly applied to how we work for employers and as employees. Ancient bond servants were very different from racially demarcated slavery. And in any case, what Paul is doing here is describing how to function within an existing reality, not teaching us not to overturn it when possible. In fact, in 1 Corinthians, he tells slaves to get their freedom if they can. And he urges Philemon to release his slave, Onesimus. But let us simply apply this to the world of work today. Paul has four keys to effectiveness at work. One, employees, do your best. With a sincere heart, as you would Christ. Two, do this for a reason, the motivational reason, namely a reward from God, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive back from the Lord. So whether in this life or in the next, all work of whatever kind can be done to God and will receive a reward from God. Three, employers, treat your employees well. Do the same to them. That is, good work in your role as an employer. For employers, do this for a reason, a motivational reason, namely here, judgment. Knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him. God will judge us for our work, whether we are an employer or an employee. One summer, I took two jobs teaching English as a foreign language. The first job was an absolute delight. The boss gave us clear instructions. He created a fun environment. He supported us. At the end of the time, he gave me such a glowing reference that I was frankly almost embarrassed or wanted to put it on my wall and frame it, you know, one way or the other. The second job was completely different. The boss was only doing it to make money out of the foreign students. They were given as little attention as possible, as little time as possible, absolute minimum, so that he could pocket the rest of the money for himself. At the end of the week, he even had the gall to have a long confrontational debate with his regional boss, demanding yet more money. Well, my experience of that second job was awful. A good boss makes a huge difference, as does having a good employee who works whether you are watching or not, because they know God is watching. In each of these three areas, then, marriage, parenting, and work, Paul is doing something specific. He is establishing order. In fact, he is establishing authority, which is a deeply unfashionable thing to say in our culture today, but nonetheless critically important. Each of the sets of instructions for marriage, parenting, and work comes with a promised blessing. A healthy marriage will show people how much Jesus loves them. A healthy parent-child relationship will give the child a lifelong trajectory of effectiveness throughout their days. A healthy boss-employee relationship will give reward. So in each of these three areas, we will do well to listen to this letter from Paul. And my grandmother, when she wrote to me with all her dearest darling affection, often still included some pretty startling direct instruction as well. She was not above telling me when something needed to change or be different. Of course, she loved me, and therefore what she said was easier to swallow. Here's a letter from Paul to the church. He is talking of marriage and family and work. All of it can be done for the Lord, and therefore all of it has spiritual significance. This relationship with Jesus is not just a Sunday thing. It's a Monday thing as well. We must not put on one set of Christian clothes on Sunday and then put on a different set of behavior on Monday. Our following of Jesus goes throughout the whole week. And we say, well, that's fine, but how? Well, Paul writes specific instructions. Submit, sacrifice, obey, train, work well, look after well. If we do that, it will go well for us. All other things being equal, in most cases, not taking into account the hard instances that I know full well can occur as I talk with people about such things pastorally. But generally speaking, following these instructions means blessing for us as a church and for us as a society. Is not the single greatest cause of crime a lack of fathering? Is not the single greatest confusion that children feel a lack of sensing their parents love and respect each other? Is not the cause of industrial friction and economic unproductivity not working well, not looking after well, not taking care of employees and pocketing as much profit as you can get, whatever happens to them and their families? Our following of Jesus goes from Sunday into Monday. Our charge, church, is to take church from Sunday into Monday. And this is how. Why, you say? What's the motivation? Well, that's here too, isn't it? So that our marriages would speak of the love of Jesus and savor our churches and our world with that love, so that our parenting will give generational blessing to our children and our children's children. So that our work will be a place where there is reward and profit and blessing for all.
That's Josh Moody, and this is The God-Centered Life. Well, we touched on the hows there. You mentioned submit, sacrifice, obey, train, work well, look after well. This is a great recipe. So how do we cook that up in a really tough work environment?
Well, that's a great question. And I think the answer is it's very hard. I've been in some very tough working environments. And when you're in that situation, you know the theory, you know, the recipe is right in your mind.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult. I suppose all I can say is that you've got to take it a day at a time. You know, sufficient unto the day is the trouble thereof, as Jesus put it. The Lord gives us manna for each day. In the morning, seek the face of God before you see the face of man. Before you have to meet your boss, your human boss, make sure you've met your boss in heaven and you're getting approval from him rather than from your human boss.
You say in that teaching, take church from Sunday into Monday. Now, you talk about how this benefits the world, but could it also benefit the church? Because, I mean, one of the things we've said throughout this series and in other series is the church is not the building. Mm-hmm. So if we're exhorted to take church from Sunday into Monday, aren't we also helping the church?
Well, for sure. Yeah. I mean, church isn't the building. It's the people. And when we gather as the church, which is what church is, we gather as his people and then we scatter to do the work of Christ. And that's what the church is. And it helps the church, I suppose, in the sense that we become more like we're meant to be.
And at the same time, it helps the world we're ministering to. Excellent. Thanks for that, Josh. Well, we're wrapping up the Biblical Answers to Life's Big Questions series. And if you'd like to go back and listen to some of these installments again, that can be done. If you're just new to the series, you can revisit them. And all of that is available through our website, GodCenteredLife.org. New study when we get together next time. We're going to be looking at how to avoid church gone wrong.
He begins by pointing to God. It's always the way. And it's the first thing that gets lost when church begins to go wrong. It starts to be about us, about me and my agenda. It starts to be a human organization.
Brand new study starting up when we gather next time. GodCenteredLife.org. Resources for you. And this is your warm invitation to join us for the next installment of The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody.